I don't remember it anymore. Okay. I remember verily this visage of verbiage veers most verbose. So let me simply say it is my very good honor to meet you, and you may call me V.
Are you like a crazy person?
Yes.
That's the next line.
Yes, I am. The Rampant Discourse Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Essen. I'm joined by my regular discoursers, Travis Hudson and Andrew Riley, and special guest discourser, Gerky. We're continuing our series on the best movies of the 2000s, where we'll be talking about our favorite movies, the most influential movies, and the others that are worthy of discourse. We're currently on 2006, and I will start us off with the top grossing movies. The top grossing movie of 2006 is Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Man's Chest with $1,066,179,725. That seems pretty high.
That was the first one?
No, Dead Man's Chest is the second one.
Second.
Dead Man's Chest is...
At World's End is the third.
So it's the second one. Okay.
Next is The Da Vinci Code with $758 million. Ice Age The Meltdown, $660 million. Casino Royale, $599 million. Night at the Museum, $574 million. Cars, $462 million. X-Men The Last Stand, $459 million. Mission Impossible 3, $397 million. Superman Returns, $391 million. And Happy Feet, $384 million. Travis, why don't you tell us about the Best Picture nominees for 2006?
All right. This is not a mistake like 2000 was, but there's not much crossover between highest grossing and Best Picture. I'm double checking everything.
I don't think there's any crossover.
Yeah, so Best Picture nominees were The Queen, Little Miss Sunshine, Letters from Iwo Jima, not Flags of Our Fathers. They didn't want to do both, I'm sure. Babel. Which way did you pronounce
Babel.
It?
Babel.
Babel. And the winner was The Departed.
So we're going to continue on with the guessing game as well. The guessing game is we're going to try to guess movies from each other's list that we have noted as our favorite or most influential. If we can guess one of our compatriots here's movies correctly, we'll gain a point. If we don't, we don't gain a point, and we're playing points for Pride Bucks. The current score is that Paul has 7 correct guesses for 7 points.
Booyah!
Gerky has 6 correct guesses for 6 points. Travis has 4 correct guesses for 4 points.
Uh-huh.
And I, Andrew, have 9 points with 9 correct guesses.
Fixed. Fixed.
Well, considering how badly I did in the 90s, I need to do a little bit.
I won the 90s. I'll take that.
So, let's go ahead and have our guesses.
Me?
Sure.
Okay. Oh, this one was hard for me. So, I am guessing for Andrew... I have a few written down for you. But I'm going with The Departed. I feel like that's an intellectual movie that you might like.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Travis.
This is not good.
Sorry, no. I'm like, this is an intellectual movie you might like. And then I realized my guess.
Borat.
That is actually what I wrote down for you, but I was debating between that and another one. But yes, I'm going with Borat for
it's
you.
It's intellectual satire on American
there
ignorance.
There you go. And for Paul, V for Vendetta.
Interesting. All right, so for Gerky, I have the obvious Step Up. And I say that so you should change your answer if that's not what you actually wrote.
Not the sequel?
No, that's Step Up 2.
Right, to the streets.
Yeah. And Travis, I have the also obvious Cars.
Okay.
And Andrew, this is not at all obvious to me, and I'm guessing that you're 50% chance you hate this movie. No. I think you like this movie. The Prestige.
Okay.
I'm curious why you think Cars is the obvious answer for me.
Because in the 90s, you were talking about how Cars was like the best Pixar movie.
Okay. All right. So my
guess is, I was wrong.
For Paul, I said V for Vendetta.
Man.
Andrew, he's been railing against how bad this year, so I think we're all going to be wrong on this one, maybe. I don't know. I said Children of Men. It seemed like maybe a premise you might enjoy.
Okay.
Why would it be a premise you would enjoy?
And for Gerky, I went with one of the bigger book movies was The Da Vinci Code.
All right. Some very solid choices from you guys. Let's go ahead and I'll throw my guesses out there too. I have, as Travis alluded to, I have railed against this year as being a bad year, so I'm not really comfortable with any of my picks, either for myself or guesses for you guys, especially with how I've made my picks, but let's go with it anyway. For Paul, I picked Idiocracy. Hmm. For Travis, and this is where I actually have in my notes, these are awful guesses for you guys, I picked Borat as well. And for Gurky, Gurky, I picked Casino Royale. Kind of a book. Kind of just general action.
Not many people know it's a book. Like, I guess, well, Bond in general.
So we'll see how that goes. I'm not high on those picks, so I might lose some of my positioning
Although I am curious, like, when people who started being fans of Bond with Casino Royale, because I was like a that was Daniel Craig's first one, right?
I believe so, yes.
I wonder how many people at this point don't know their original books.
Or that wasn't even that the first Casino Royale.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right, so who starts off with the revelations?
Yeah, you do, I think.
I do? Let's go.
Your favorite movie.
What's your favorite movie?
2006.
I'm gonna...
Remember the 5th of November.
That's right.
I thought you were going to go with the V speech. I have it up there.
In view of a humble vaudevillian veteran, cast vicariously as both victim and villain by the vicissitudes of fate. Oh, yes. I can't
remember. More words to start with V.
This, besides no mere veneer of vanity, is the last vestige of the vox populi, now vacant, vanished.
However.
I don't remember it anymore. I remember verily this visage of verbiage veers most verbose, so let me simply say it is my very good honor to meet you, and you may call me V.
Are you like a crazy person?
Yes. So
that's the next
yes,
line.
Yes, I am.
Speaking of books and movies, I'm not saying it's good one way or the other. Have you actually read the graphic novel? Okay.
Have not read the graphic novel.
What's interesting is we read Alan Moore, who did the book. He did Swamp Thing as well. And I think he was writing them at the same time. And a demon in Swamp Thing makes the V symbol out of fire when he's casting a spell that somebody pointed out that I didn't catch when I was reading it at first.
Yeah, I thought about using the speech as my guess for you, and I was like, no, that's too much of a tongue twister there.
It's hard, yeah. So, as Andrew alluded to, this is a pretty weak year, and I do like V for Vendetta.
That movie.
I do like it. I'm not trying to necessarily sell it short, but if I were to make a top 50 movies of my favorites, I don't know if I'd make it. But I think it's pretty clearly my favorite here. I don't know really what to say about it. It just brings up a lot of interesting political questions. I mean, you can make a very compelling argument that the hero is not a good person. And
he's a very good anti-hero.
Terrorist, in fact.
He's definitely a terrorist.
And that's very strange, especially in modern times, to have the hero be like a terrorist whose plot is to blow up the government.
He's a Guy Fawkes.
Yeah, let's say
he's wearing a Guy Fawkes mask.
All
I
true.
Have your mask.
Yeah.
I almost pulled it out last time, but then we didn't do this year.
Yeah.
So Paul.
Yes.
Why won't you die?
He's like, what are you talking about?
I mean, like, what do you... I know what you're talking about, but why...
Because ideas are bulletproof.
You wanted me to respond with that?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of good... ideas in the movie, I think. I shouldn't say good. There are a lot of very interesting ideas. And that one is a good idea. Like, that ideas are bulletproof. But, yeah, it's...
Did Anonymous use that mask before the movie already? Or were they...
I think they were using it already because it existed as a Guy Fawkes reference, right. So...
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so I don't have a ton to say about it. It's a well-constructed movie. It's interesting as a movie, just in terms of, like, the plot points and action scenes and whatnot, but what makes it transcend that, I think, is just that the political ideas behind it and it being interesting that the hero is not a good guy and a terrorist and how that's kind of
so. I almost want to give a little bit of half credits as well, because this movie shouldn't have come out in 2006.
Okay,
it was originally going to come out back in 2005, and we would have talked about it last year. But it had to be delayed because of the bombings of the metro system in London. And so they're like, we're not going to release this blowing up the government terrorist movie about, bombings in the UK so shortly after the terrorist bombings. And so they pushed it back to the next year. So it released, I think, in March 2006.
Hmm. I vaguely remember that. And if I recall correctly, isn't there... There's also, like, a bioweapon that's released by the government. Mm-hmm. And so who knows if it would come out.
Well, what's also interesting is the fact that, like... Yeah, and considering when it was written in the early 80s, that the political aspect is still so relevant.
Yeah, I think when it first came out, it was kind of in response to the George W. Bush administration, right?
No. Maybe it was, but every movie,
the movie, I should
oh,
say.
The movie, yeah, I was sorry, say, no, the book was Thatcherism. Yeah, what Alan Moore was. Always
but the movie was supposed to be like a. I think the Prime Minister of Britain was supposed to be a gay George W. Bush type of figure who was controversial in his time. For those who don't remember. If we have any young audience members.
Right. I mean, books and movies are always artifacts of their time and when they're made, and they're reflecting that. And we can see echoes of them in other times. And sometimes they get used in opposite directions. Even though it was pointing towards George W. Bush, the movie version, a lot of the themes were equally as valid in being used by conservatives against Obama, because Obama considered many of the exact same practices that George Bush used himself.
Mm-hmm.
So who's next?
Do I have my favorite and my influential at the same time?
No, favorite.
All right,
fine. I'll go.
I can't remember.
I kind of had a toss up. My wife reminded me of a new movie that I did really like, but my original instinct give Paul the point. I believe it's Cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. I probably did say it was my favorite Pixar movie. It's definitely the one Pixar movie I have watched the most.
Which is shocking because I've still never seen it.
We just I need to have seen like it all the way through. I don't think.
Of course, I also haven't seen any Toy Story movie in its entirety. So
I think I saw the first one in its entirety. I haven't seen any of the subsequent ones though.
But yeah, Car. Like to me, if you look under the hood, it's basically kind of Doc Hollywood, which isn't a reference that apparently many people got, but it's a Michael J. Fox movie.
We talked about this before.
We talked about
this
before. Right? I know. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's basically what it is. It's hotshot coastal guy gets stuck. In a midwestern city,
middle America,
and learns to love it there. So, but Luke Wilson's performance in it is great, right? Is that it?
Owen Wilson,
yeah. Luke Wilson's his brother. Yeah. But Owen Wilson, Michael Keaton is like the kind of bad guy in it.
Well, Michael Keaton's in it.
I'm pretty sure that's who Chick Hicks is. You can fact check me on that one.
I will. Owen Wilson is in Cars.
He's Lightning McQueen.
Yeah, that one I knew, Owen Wilson.
Yeah, Michael Paul Keaton. Newman, I think, is Doc Hudson.
Oh my god. You want me to fetch up all these?
But
just
no,
look at Cars IMDb.
Just the cast. And Larry the Cable Guy is Mater.
Of course, everyone knows that one at least.
Like Tuh Mater.
Paul Newman is Doc Hudson. Larry the Cable Guy is Mater.
I mean, my wife and I will quote this movie all the time. Like, you know, Mater's like, she only acts before my body. And stuff like, his character or... Hooking up to Bessie, like there's just so many scenes I like. It's
clever and well written, and it appeals in a way that I think other movies, that even ones that Pixar has made, they fail to. They are reaching a very different audience here, which is one of the reasons why Paul is kind of shocked by this and has never seen it.
So one thing, like I'd say, it is my favorite. I can also see though where it didn't push any boundaries like Pixar is known for. There's not like new fur technology or water, or any, you know, there's not really anything new in that. I mean, it's shiny cars. It wasn't, but that doesn't detract from the fun of watching it to me. And it has, a typical Pixar. It has like a nice touching story. It's not like a tearjerker like they're usually going for. But yeah, so I greatly enjoy Cars, and I guess... Not like Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift, which was also this year.
Different kind of cars.
Yes.
So I'm on to my pick for my favorite movie of 2006. And this is one that I'm sure is going to be a bit of a shocker for you guys. My favorite movie of 2006 is Thank You for Smoking.
Was that a sarcastic shocker? Because that's not surprising to me.
Well, nobody picked it.
Well, yeah. I think that was on my list for you, though.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so Thank You for Smoking is a look at a lobbyist... lobbying for the tobacco industry.
Aaron Eckhart, right?
Aaron Eckhart plays the lobbyist and does a really good job of talking about the political aspects of something that is popular but unhealthy. Smoking is obviously really bad for you, but legal. And how Congress was making it less legal, but in weird ways. and whether or not that was okay. It you know, brings in questions of personal freedom and responsibility that are important. And, you know, at the end of the movie, you know, he recognizes that smoking is really bad. He's making sure his son doesn't start smoking. But it's based on a book that asks a lot of these same questions, but the movie presents it in a way that I'm surprised Hollywood was able to do.
I've never seen the movie. Would you say it's fair to say he has a change of heart from the beginning to the end?
I think he does have his position changed, where at the start of the movie, he's really gung-ho about the position. He's able to be full-throated in his support of smoking. Mm-hmm. And by the end, he's acknowledging that, yeah, okay, this is unhealthy, but I'm still going to do my job because it's what my job, and because people have the right to do this, even if it's bad for them. But he's definitely much more anti-smoking.
Is there, I guess, possible spoiler alert, is there a singular moment that crystallizes his change of heart?
Not that I would say.
Because it seems like it's custom made for, like, hey, you have lung cancer. Or
something
your
like son that. Has lung cancer.
Or your son has lung cancer.
Well, his son is really young, so his son having lung cancer would be really bad.
Yeah.
But no, there are no single crystalline moment where, okay, this is the thing. It is a progression, and it's a good story. It's well written and well acted, and, you know, again, a story that you wouldn't expect Hollywood to make.
Because this is way off topic, but I'm going to go ahead and mention it. I think it's Angels in the Outfield.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moment during this Disney family-friendly film, you know, all uplifting and stuff about the, you know, seeing angels and whatnot, where at the very end, they're like, I can't remember exactly how it goes, but there's a pitcher out there who's struggling, and the coach is thinking of taking him out, and the angel is saying, the angel is saying, like, I really wish I could remember the specifics, but basically he says, oh, we're going to see him soon because he's got lung cancer. He's going to die in like 6 months or something like that. And it's a surprisingly downer moment in like an uplifting family-friendly film. And I remember clearly that, like, my parents, when we were watching that, I think one of them turned to the other and said, like, well, that's kind of a good advertisement against smoking right there, you know? Or I don't even know if it was my parents, but some like adult was like talking about, wow, it's a really one of the best advertisements you can think of, just having from complete out of left field, if you will, have a gut punch like that, where like this guy is kind of one of the heroes of the movie
Angels in the Outfield is late 90s, and here we are mid 2000s, and you can see we've got the progression, and now as we move into the 2010s and onwards a little bit, we are seeing that, you know, smoking is effectively banished from movies. There are no smokers. If there are smokers, they're really bad people for the most part. And any movie that depicts smoking gets special warnings of the same kind that you would for gratuitous violence or nudity.
Mm-hmm.
So Hollywood has gone very hard anti-smoking. And it, you know, not without good cause. We model our lives on what we see. We see a lot of Hollywood movies. So if we see a lot of smoking in Hollywood, we may have more smokers. But this movie paints smoking in a bad light without painting the smokers as evil, which is important.
Would you say it's mostly fiction, or would you say there's nonfiction aspects to it in the sense of how the laws work?
It plays like a nonfiction documentary kind of movie, but with some biting satire and strong comedy in it as well. It is definitely a fictional story, but you could absolutely see it being true to life. It's not fictionalized.
So it's not based on an actual lobbyist,
right? No.
Not something like The Big Sick, where that was like actual people.
Right. This is pure fiction. But I do like the movie quite a lot, and it's definitely the best movie I saw from this year.
Still worth seeing, you think?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
So, my favorite is with Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves.
They were not in Step Up.
You're right, they're not.
I haven't seen the movie, but I'm pretty sure they were not.
It's The Lake House.
That was this year?
That was this year. I went back and forth on what to pick for my favorite on this one. But The Lake House did take it. It's a romance with time travel, basically, almost. A magic mailbox, which lets them communicate over time. It was surprisingly heartwarming.
As romantic I guess it's not a romantic comedy, really.
Not really
it's
comedy.
Just a romance.
Yeah.
A time travel romance.
Kind of. I mean, it's interesting because, like, the previews in it, I'm like, what? That looks weird. But then when I actually watched it, I was like, oh, that's actually really good.
I think I've actually seen the entirety of it. And yeah, it's not bad. The time travel aspects are pretty appealing. Because there are some cute things about that. I guess they plant a tree and it shows up all of a sudden or whatnot. the house itself is really kind of neat looking. It's just like this glass house on a lake. You know, anything Keanu Reeves is in is gold. So that's kind of cool. And I think
Sandra Bullock too.
Yeah, she's okay. And haven't there been a lot of like jokes made about the time traveling?
I don't think I've ever heard of this movie. I'm trying to keep this family friendly, but like the time traveling mailbox.
Yeah, I thought somebody like stuck something inappropriate in the mailbox.
Yeah, they didn't actually, not in the movie.
Well, no, but like in, jokes parody, about in the parody, it's like
I really have no idea what you're talking about.
We'll talk to you when you're older.
Okay, when the old bitter man is older.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is still family friendly.
Vaguely related to what Justin Timberlake's skit on Saturday Night Live, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, which Andrew still doesn't get.
In a box?
But,
no.
You can't
stick that in the mailbox.
That's
creative, but physically impossible, Mr. Garibaldi.
Moving on.
All right. So my influential, and again, I want to stress, weak year, is Borat. Mostly because you get a lot of people going very nice and
that was my other pick
and
for
doing
you.
Doing the accent like all year long. It does lead pretty directly to Bruno.
I was gonna say
that's not a good thing.
It's a launching pad for Sacha Baron Cohen.
I mean, he had the Ali G show.
He still had Ali G before that, right?
Yes, Ali G was before.
I think it kind of made a little bit more popular the idea of people playing a role of an ignorant doofus to reveal the prejudices of others. I think, when did the Colbert Report come out? It was before this, right?
2006. No, yeah, Colbert was definitely happening as an independent show or as part of
the Daily Show.
It was happening as a part of the Daily Show when we were in college.
Okay, yeah. So maybe it's not as influential about that, but I feel like it did kind of carved out its own special part, niche, I guess, in cinema, to have somebody pretending to be a completely fictitious character going around and just kind of spitballing with average Americans and trying to get them to do to reveal their prejudices and stuff, like throw the Jew down the well and stuff like that, and made the news. And I don't know. That's my best argument for how influential Borat is.
I agree that it is an influential movie in the sense that it affected the culture, especially in the moment, but even after, because, yes, he's really probably the only one doing it, but he's still doing this. Even to this day.
Is he? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. He's got another one coming out this year, next year.
So I don't know if you've heard, and gosh, I'm taking this off target a lot, but whatever. Recently, Sacha Baron Cohen has made some seemingly very serious comments about how, like, and you'll appreciate this, how Facebook is like the most evil thing because it's like allowing all this perpetuation of like these stereotypes and hate speech and everything. And it really, really seems to me like he's playing a character. Like, it's amazing to me how kind of he can have this cognitive dissonance in thinking that what he did with Borat and Bruno was all okay, and yet at the same time criticize Facebook for stuff that they're doing. But anyway, I'm curious if that's going to be a character going forward,
right,
if he's actually serious.
It's bleeding the reality like Andy Kaufman did.
Or even Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, but I was trying to remember his name. Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix had a movie that he was promoting where he did that too. Right?
Yeah, he went on the tour as the crazy man, essentially. And he completely broken down.
But it's just bizarre to see him like railing against like fake news in quotes on like Facebook and people like and all this stuff when he made his entire career on lies basically and expecting the American people to be like, oh, it's okay because it's funny, it's comedy and whatnot, and now he's like saying no, Facebook is evil because they're allowing misleading stuff on the website. Anyway, the only reason I bring it up is because I wonder sometimes if he's actually
that is an elaborate bit
for some movie in the future where he's gonna be playing, I don't know, super woke man or whatever, what it would be. I don't even know what it'd be. I can't imagine.
But perhaps in that way, it's still influential, and that we can't necessarily, that we can't have a grasp on reality all the time.
We'll let you know when we're doing the movies of the 2020s.
So my most influential, I've only seen it once, and I think I saw it on a plane, but I actually enjoyed watching it, is The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh yeah, it's a pretty good game.
So it has a couple of things. Like, as far as I could tell, it broke
Anne Hathaway
out of her, before this was Princess Diaries, Ella Enchanted. She was kind of getting typecast. She does this. It's Emily Blunt's first major role.
Who's now? Oh, she's in it too.
Yeah.
John Krasinski's wife.
Yeah, and it's not influential. Like, they are influential, I guess. Meryl Streep and Stanley Tucci are in it. But I mean, its Wikipedia page literally has a subsection: cultural impact and legacy.
Like, fair enough.
But because like there's a citation that the New York Times said it defined the image of personal assistance in the public mind. And then the other one that I always thought that sticks most in my mind, and probably most people who see the movie, is that it began the democratization of the fashion industry when masses started paying attention to the business of what they wore, which breaks down to whoever's seen the movie when she does the speech about the sweater,
yep.
explaining how that flowed all the way down to the person shopping at Walmart. So
it was influential for me. I know what Prada is now.
The devil wears it.
I actually at first had that written down, but I changed mine.
Wait, for Travis?
No, for Mr. Influential. But I do, I recently watched this. I was listening to the book on tape for it recently. I really like this story a lot. Anyway.
Well, I enjoyed the movie quite a bit as well, but I was surprised that it was that influential. It goes to show you how not tuned into that kind of stuff I am. My choice for most influential film for 2006 is... make sure I get this one right. Oh, that's right. That's why. It's a V for Vendetta.
No. That's why you couldn't pick it for me?
Right, because I'm not going to duplicate the list, although I do duplicate elsewhere. So I really probably should.
That's allowed.
I think more because I wanted to get Idiocracy at least mentioned, but I don't think it would have been otherwise. But yeah, V for Vendetta is...
You want to get Idiocracy mentioned as a pick for my favorite?
Apparently, no, as a favorite or influential. It is kind of influential.
There's a section at the end
more influential than V for Vendetta.
It's what plants need.
But yeah, I picked V for Vendetta as the most influential because it was influential as a graphic novel in the 80s. Mm-hmm. It was influential on the culture of the 2000s. Yes, Guy Fawkes goes back way back, but it really sprang as something even bigger afterwards and changed the nature of some of the discourse that was happening, especially online and amongst certain groups. So
The Prestige nowhere?
I've not seen The Prestige.
What? Which one is The Prestige again?
I don't know, but I'm shocked.
You don't know, because there are two magician movies.
Is it the Christopher Nolan one?
I don't know.
What?
What's the other one, though?
Yeah,
The Illusionist.
The Illusionist and The Prestige.
Prestige sounds like the Nolan one, but I can't remember the actors.
I think The Prestige is the Nolan one that has Hugh Jackman and...
I wanted to see it, but this was the time...
Not Benedict Cumberbatch.
I think it came out very close when I was getting married, and I just didn't have time to see movies anymore, so... I was like, I'll see it on Netflix eventually.
And I am shocked and disappointed that you have not seen and considered to be your favorite.
I would say your guess out of the three guesses for me was the best, and that it's a movie I'm interested in seeing.
So I get a point.
No.
You didn't like The Departed?
I hated
The Departed. I thought that one might be one you'd like.
I have
Christian
seen
Bale and Hugh Jackman.
I thought it was Christian Bale because...
Oh, and Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
I'm suddenly interested in seeing it now.
Jeez.
Oh, God. Paul, come on. Yeah.
Sorry, Gerke. I have seen The Departed. Assets, yeah. I really disliked it. It was pretty awful.
Okay.
Well, I have a story about Departed later, but I'll save it for further discourse.
So, my most influential. That's where we are, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Step up.
Come on.
Da Vinci Code.
Oh, I get a point.
Well done,
Travis. I really liked that. I liked the book. I liked the movie.
And that's
actually, the movie was okay. I liked the book better. Movie was good. I liked the subsequent movies. Like, Angels and Demons was out as well. Did they do two or three of his books as movies? I like Dan Brown a lot, which this movie introduced me to. I don't think I had read the book first.
And that makes it influential because...
He's done it. There's been subsequent movies, and they introduce Freemasons and, I think, Knights Templar to the masses. It was a huge...
Yeah, just all your explanations so far has been like, I really like the books, I really like the movies, I like Dan Brown.
Well, I mean... that they have multiple books and multiple movies based on it. No, because at first Devil Wears Prada was going to be my one, and I changed it to Da Vinci Code because I thought Da Vinci Code was more influential than Devil Wears Prada.
Fair.
Because of the subsequent books.
Yeah, she thinks you're wrong.
Devil Wears Prada was not influential. When did National Treasure come out?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
Well, why?
I just feel like that's like a dumbed down version of the Da Vinci Code, right?
Hey, you take that back. Nicolas Cage is a smarter man than Tom Hanks ever was.
No. I mean, Da Vinci Code is smart. Not necessarily... Let's see. 2004.
Oh, we missed it. Mm. So really, Da Vinci Code is the dumbed-down version of National Treasure.
No. question is, when did the Da Vinci Code book come out?
It was not too long before the movie, because it was a big, big deal the year or two before the movie, and then the movie came out pretty quick after. So I'm going to say probably 2004 is when it was published, maybe 2003. Well, while Gerke's fact-checking that.
2003. But, nice. Well, one of the things that come up, as the people also ask, why is the Da Vinci Code a banned book? And so, I guess it's banned in Lebanon because it's offensive to Christianity. So
and,
Catholic leaders...
And Lebanon banned it?
Yeah, Catholic leaders called for the book to be withdrawn because of its depiction of Christ marrying Mary Magdalene and fathering a child.
I could see it being offensive to Christians, but Lebanon? Yeah. So, is this about Lebanon that I don't know about?
I was surprised to see that show up as a...
I knew
it's a question.
I knew it was like, highly controversial, and I'm not surprised to hear it was banned. I did know that the Vatican had denounced the book soundly.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the worst book, Harry Potter or Da Vinci Code?
Book?
Did you read
it? Which is the more offensive to Christianity book?
Oh, okay.
That's what I was
Did you read it?
Da Vinci Code? No, I've not read Da Vinci Code, actually. So I should recuse myself.
Read it.
Yeah, I should recuse myself from that one.
I'll find Cobb out.
Well, heck, I can't tell you until I read it.
All right, fine.
You can say which one you think Catholicism thinks is worse.
Yeah, and that's tougher. I would say that as a piece of fiction, Harry Potter's probably more offensive, simply because it is specifically and purposefully dealing in a cult, whereas the Da Vinci Code is a fictional representation of conspiracy theories.
So
rather than something
being heretical is better than being dabbling in the occult.
Being heretical is something that humans can do. Dabbling in the occult brings in otherworldly aspects. So I think that's probably where the breakdown is. And I think this is something where people could be of two minds.
Fair.
Yeah.
Worthy of discourse?
So
worthy of discourse.
But yeah.
You.
Well, one thing I was going to say is you could have waited and brought Idiocracy there if you really wanted to make sure something got mentioned.
Yeah, I suppose I could have, but I do have other things to talk about. So
the only thing I would say, one movie I was going to bring up, just so as much as you hate The Departed, I might not be married if not for it, because that was our second date.
Yay.
And if
the
I had
first
not,
date was great.
If I had not talked on the second date more than I talked on the first date, I probably would not have gotten a third one. So the fact that this movie was good enough for us to go to dinner and talk afterwards has to mean it has a special place.
Thank God
for me.
Leonardo DiCaprio gave you the strength.
I guess so. Or Matt Damon or Jack Nicholson.
No, Leonardo DiCaprio. We all know which one it was.
My 1990s boy crush, yes.
Yeah, didn't you say like you are like a 16-year-old teenage girl?
Yes, he did.
Yes, I did.
That's why all my guesses for him are Johnny Depp or Leonardo DiCaprio. And I'm like, okay. But apparently I should have gone with Devil Wears Prada, 16-year-old girl guess.
Hey, Anne Hathaway's in that one.
If he was a 16-year-old lesbian girl, then maybe. All right. So my worthy discourse are worthy only because they're so crappy-ish. Blood Rain.
That's a really bad
movie. Does anyone know Blood Rain?
Yes.
I've never seen it.
I've never seen it, but I remember it was
Kristanna
like...
Loken goes from the Terminatrix of T3 to starring in this movie. And
ending her career.
Ending her career permanently. I think it's a U-Ball flick.
U-Ball,
who is U-Ball, who is notorious for making just the worst video game adaptations. And this seems to be like no other.
This is probably the worst of his worst. I mean, it's...
That's saying something. That's even worse than like In the Name of the King or...
Yes.
What was the one with Tara Reid?
Is that
Into the Dark? Or,
no. That he didn't do that.
Alone in the Dark?
Alone in the Dark. Yeah,
Alone in the Dark. Wasn't that Christian Slater as well?
I think so. I don't know how he gets like legit actors.
Money.
Being, I guess.
Tara Reid.
Where does he get the money?
From the German
Christian Slater.
Christian Slater still has
He gets
something.
The money from the German government. They subsidize his films. Well, they did. They don't do it anymore, which is why he doesn't make movies anymore.
Yeah. And the other one, I actually haven't seen it, but Snakes on a Plane was apparently a little disappointing. But everyone was going gaga over it.
No.
Because it was a stupid idea. It's like the whole Sharknado thing.
Well, it was one of the first, like, that was when memes were first becoming a thing, right?
Yeah.
And, like, it actually got a movie made out of it.
And it's
which is hilarious to watch on network cable.
Because of all the censoring of the
Yeah, get these, it's like,
get these
mother-loving, monkey-loving snakes off this Monday to Friday plane or something.
I don't know how this is. Yeah, this is gonna work. The Good Place. You asked about this a couple podcast episodes ago, where one kind of novel thing is no one can swear in The Good Place, And so,
this bad person is incapable of swearing.
And so she keeps trying to swear, yeah. And they spawn this entire, like, you know, mother forking, shirt balls, and like there's all sorts of different like replacements that come up for swear words.
So some good humor there.
There's some humor there that they tap pretty consistently. Forking becomes a very common word.
Use the forks.
Yeah.
One quick movie I'd mention is Ultraviolet, which is
kind of
a forgettable movie. But I did like the song they used in the trailer was 24 by Jem.
Yeah.
Hmm. The rest of that album is like lounge music, though.
No, the rest of the album, that's actually really like that. I mean, it's definitely not the same song.
It's not the same as 24. Definitely not. 24 is a very unique piece, but that was the entire reason I basically... But it was also, it was also Mila Jovovich, or who was the actress?
No, it was Charlize Theron, right?
Was Eon Flux.
Oh, Ultraviolet?
Yeah, I think it was Miller Jovovich.
Okay.
Yeah,
so that was the main two reasons I saw it. But the music, that was one of the best trailer musics I had heard.
Yeah, very solid.
I can't remember if we talked about Titan A.E. or not, but Higher by Creed was used in the trailer for Titan A.E. was never used in the movie. And I thought it was one of the greatest uses of a song in a trailer.
Oh, I think we must have, because I feel like I remember talking to you guys about Karma Police. Not Karma Police. That's a different song entirely.
Yeah, it is.
All
right, well, Andrew's thinking.
Well, I was going to say, while we talk about good uses of properties, one bad thing I would say I'll have to bring up is that Superman Returns was pretty bad use of
Superman.
And like, kind of set, just as we're 2 years away from the MCU starting, and DC's squandering its lead. I mean, just had Batman Begins the year before this, and they try with Superman, and
it's like, oh, we can do Superman too.
They missed the point. Well, yeah. Well, and like they try to do this weird thing where like, let's pretend Superman 3 and 4 didn't happen.
We'll just go Superman 2. Superman
1 and 2 did, or...
and we'll get a new actor for.
Yeah, let's not use Brandon Routh or whatever had been playing it. Like,
Brandon Routh was in Superman Returns.
Or it was Michael Cavill, or... I don't know. They had multiple...
Henry Cavill is one from Man of Steel.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that...
And The Witcher.
He's cute.
Henry Cavill? Well, yeah. No, he's not cute. He's hot.
He's hot.
Yeah. That's weird. Just Brandon Routh is cute. Henry Cavill's hot. To be clear.
Your husband.
Cillian Murphy. Right. Gotcha.
Cillian Murphy's hot.
How about Talladega Nights?
How about it?
Shake and bake.
No one's
never saw it.
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
That's a quote from the movie. Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah. I'm with you. You've seen it. They haven't. That's okay. You know, for
pizza. Okay, right. Thank you.
I know you guys like Will Ferrell more than me, I think, and I'm surprised that this one didn't turn up.
This is the same year as Cars. That's interesting.
Yeah. So Talladega Nights is another Will Ferrell-driven comedy, over the top. Feels a lot like Anchorman, but maybe not quite as solid all around, not the ensemble cast, but I really like his chemistry with John C. Reilly. They work really well together.
Yeah, they had Step Brothers later on, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why, but Talladega Nights is always flown on the radar for me in terms of Will Ferrell movies. Like,
I get
Anchorman,
the point that you don't like racing.
Maybe that's it. Huh. I don't like Fast and Furious. I don't like Cars. I don't like Talladega Nights.
Don't like Gone in 60 Seconds.
I didn't like Days of Thunder. Actually, I didn't see it.
What about The Italian Job? That wasn't really racing.
Didn't like The Italian Job. Wow.
That wasn't even really
racing.
Don't
like
I don't like Cars.
You're not a car guy.
And you had, and you've never seen Cars?
Like, man. I gotta think about this. There might be something to that. Man.
Gonna just start riding a bike. this was also Will Ferrell's year where he tried to break out of comedy with Stranger Than Fiction.
I don't even remember that movie.
That was like he realized he was living inside a novel.
Oh, Will Ferrell?
Like that.
Yeah.
I never saw it, but I know that was like kind of like that was his attempt at trying to break out of the Talladega Nights.
I think there was an author writing about him, and he realized that the author, he can hear like the narration or something in his head. Yeah.
So it's like
Being John Malkovich.
Being John Malkovich is another super weird movie, but I was thinking about one we talked about previously with Jim Carrey. I was thinking.
Oh,
Truman Show. Yeah.
Again, I haven't seen Strangers in Fiction, but yeah, and that was also Carrie's change to more dramatic roles.
And Will Ferrell realized maybe this was a mistake and went back to comedy.
Yep.
Probably the right choice.
Well, it's funny because I always think of Will Ferrell and Adam Sandler as being pretty similar in terms of over-the-top ridiculous comedies, but then every once in a while we'll make like a super serious drama that is sometimes well-received, or surprisingly well-received.
Yeah, apparently Adam Sandler just had, what is it, something about diamonds?
Yeah.
It's a basketball movie. Uncut Diamonds or something?
Yeah, or maybe just Uncut. Or, something like that. Yeah, something, yeah.
Anyway, apparently it's a very good movie. As much flack as he gets for all his Netflix stuff, like, and that's apparently like, a very good movie.
Punch Drunk Love or something was also in Anger Management, maybe, or maybe that might not have been as well received, but yeah. Any other worthy of discourse?
Have any of you guys seen Aquila and the Bee?
No, but I've heard of it.
It's a spelling bee, right?
Yeah. It's a spelling bee.
I'm pretty sure I've seen it.
I really liked it. I thought it was really well done.
I liked it much better than another one, that Little Miss Sunshine. I think that was the same year.
I did not
like that, but I did like Aquila and the Bee.
I think I might have liked Little Miss Sunshine too, but I definitely liked Aquila and the Bee better.
They made a sequel? Sorry.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
I should mention the other movie that I almost made as my favorite was Silent Hill.
Oh.
If we were talking about bad video game adaptations, this is one of the better ones.
Silent Hill might be the best video game adaptation.
What about the first Resident Evil? I think we've had that before. But
Mortal Kombat's the best one.
Clearly.
We've said this.
That's true. We've been down this path already. We know.
Yeah. But yeah, Silent Hill, like, I might have just played Silent Hill 2. Because it was weird. I bought Silent Hill 4, and GameStop sold me, like, well, while you're waiting for that to come out, because I pre-ordered it, here's Silent Hill 3. And if you're going to play Silent Hill 3, you might as well play Silent Hill 2. And they couldn't sell me 1, because it was on PlayStation 1. And then, but anyway, so I started at 2. And I never played any other ones, but 2 was scary as hell. And seeing this movie, and it had like the characters from the movie in it, or from the game in the movie. And yeah, it was just, I mean, it was a well done horror movie. And then to be based in Silent Hill, which I already had vivid memories of playing the game, made it doubly good.
I'm still a little haunted by the scene of that police officer being burned alive. I don't know if you remember or not.
This is it's been many years since I have seen it. As much as I love it, this is one of the DVDs I believe I still own.
Okay, yeah. It's, I don't know, it's just, it's a type of scene you don't often see in a movie. I feel like usually they're like cut away or something.
Right.
Whereas instead, like, you just like see them like melting. It's like, ugh.
But I can also like still hear the siren of,
yeah,
that portends Pyramid Head about to make an appearance. Like, yeah, which is from the game too,
perpetual fog,
I think.
And everything, yeah.
So, what, yeah.
The other one I was going to list as another worthy of discourse is Aragorn. Now, did you guys read the books?
I'm pretty sure I've read the book. I know my daughter has. I think I picked it up at the same time. But
yeah. So this movie was disappointing.
Yeah.
But it had good material, right? Like,
yeah, the book's
the
fine.
Book was good.
The book's fine.
I read the first three. I know Christopher Paolini came out with the fourth one recently. I didn't go back and read them because
I definitely have only read the first one. If I've even read that one, I'm getting all kinds of false memories on it. So if I read it, it didn't stick really well. It was just a pile of fantasy at some point.
Yeah, I think just because like all these fantasies had come out with Harry Potter doing so well and everything, and you kind of expected that Aragorn would be able to do a good job of the movie because, you know, they just had Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, all these great fantasies, and it had good material.
Right, it's not that the script was bad.
So
it was bad direction, bad acting.
It just didn't work. It was sad, and yeah, obviously, and I didn't watch the Game of the Thrones TV show, but from what I understand, they did the dragons well there. Right, like I don't know if they could go back to it now and fix and do it over again.
Sean Connery,
if it's worth it at all.
I think so. I was going to say,
oh,
there was one with Sean Connery.
Yeah, that's. If this is what I'm thinking of, that is a really bad movie.
Yeah. You guys were all like, oh, yeah, waiting to see if I was going to say I loved it or hated it.
No, it's terrible.
No.
I knew it was bad. I just was remembering, is that the one that I saw there, or is this the one that I'm remembering from another? Because there was another one, like Dragon Heart, that was also really bad. So.
Dragon Heart might be the Sean Connery one.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it.
That's why that one was bad. Whichever one Sean Connery was in is a bad movie. Yeah. Either way, it could have been much better.
Andrew, you're not mentioning Little Children or Blood Diamond?
No.
Do you know the connection between them?
No.
Jennifer Connelly.
Okay, she did both of those movies this year?
And Leonardo DiCaprio was in Blood Diamond as well.
Interesting. I should probably watch those.
I thought Blood Diamond was one I had listed for you as a possible match.
Because of Leo, yes.
Clerks 2 is also my,
Clerks
on my 2, list.
Clerks 2 was starred on there, like, but it's...
Yeah.
It's decent for what it was. The most memorable scene in it is when When Randall makes fun of the Lord of the Rings is one of the funniest scenes in that movie.
Yeah.
So, it looks like Sean Connery was not in Aragorn.
Thank God.
Okay, it was Jeremy Irons.
Also, should have been better.
Sienna Guillory and John Malkovich. And Aragorn has apparently 16% of Rotten Tomatoes.
Terrible.
So, legitimately terrible. Dragonheart.
John Malkovich is a good actor, too.
Dragonheart did have Sean Connery. It also had Dennis Quaid.
Yep.
Dina Meyer of Starship Troopers fame. And David Thewlis, who is, what's his name? The werewolf from Harry Potter.
Lupin?
Thank you, Lupin. Yeah.
Remus Lupin. So. And what's its Rotten Tomatoes for Dragonheart?
50%.
Yeah. Definitely, so, like, three times as good.
Better.
Yeah.
Okay, do you have anything else to discuss before we close this chapter on what is generally agreed upon to be a mediocre year? All right. Well, thank you for listening in and listen in for the next year coming up soon. Definitely check us out on our Discord channel, discord.io/rampantdiscourse. You can find us on Twitter at rampantdisc. On Facebook, we have a Facebook page. RampantDiscourse.com. Leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to our podcast, and you can't stop the discourse.
The politics are still so strong and still so relevant, considering the book was like
very early,
like 80s, very right? early 80s and British. Like, so it's just...
That's an interesting noise for us.
I'll go ahead and pause it.
To say, I assume we should just pick up where I started talking.
It's very British.
Don't look at my sheet, Paul.
I'm just...